Hey guys, this is Greg, and before we start the podcast, I want to give a quick shout out to a couple of our sponsors. First off, there's CSS, Centralized Showing Service. Everybody knows these guys. They've been around since 1996. CSS has a great solution to provide agents with a quick, courteous, and accurate way to schedule their showings. Kevin Hughes joined the company last year and is making some big moves and some cool hires. Recently, they announced a partnership with CoreLogic that will give agents a way to quickly access scheduling information. They can also book and cancel and reschedule showings online, deliver and receive automated showing notifications by email and text messaging, edit listing information, collect and share feedback, a whole bunch of stuff. This is all integrated with Matrix via their SSO. So big thanks to them, and check them out at showings.com. And I'd also like to thank CoreLogic. CoreLogic is the makers of organized real estate's most used MLS system, Matrix. They recently announced Trestle, which is basically a marketplace for listings. So if you're a broker, Trestle helps you manage listings better, your listings better. If you're a technology provider, you can use Trestle to aggregate listings for your app, so you don't have that expense anymore. If you're an MLS, Trestle helps you manage all your data relationships. Recently, they announced Trestle achieved Rezo Platinum certification, so that's fantastic. Check out the show notes for links to both these products. Also, if our listeners are interested in sponsoring the Industry Relations Podcast, please drop me a line at gregroberson@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. And now, on with the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to an episode of Industry Relations. This is your host, Rob Hahn, with my co-host, Greg Robertson, who is on the line. Greg.
Hola, Rob.
Hola. How are you?
All right. Konnichiwa. Thank you for asking. Hey, by the way, just everybody, congratulations on your nuptials.
Thank you very much. I'm a very fortunate man. And congratulations on your nuptials with CRMLS. You've gone past the dating phase there, right?
Yeah, I'd want to find out who did longer courting on that one. So we'll talk about that at another time.
I know, really. I actually kind of feel bad because we haven't done one of these in months.
Exactly. So busy, yeah.
So first of all, to our audience, we apologize. We're very sorry. But as you kind of heard, Greg and I both have had some major things going on in our lives. But we're here, and we wanted to do a special episode that we'd like to call the 2017 in review. Clearly, we're not going to cover every little thing that happened in 2017, but we thought we might touch, maybe the top five issues. So, I guess we could just kick it right off because we're going to spend a lot of time talking about all these various things. What do you see as sort of the top thing, top five things, Greg?
Yeah. So if I'm looking at it here, and I was looking at our past episodes, I think, we started off with this whole a notion of NAR's leadership, because that's when were announced a new CEO and nobody knew what the CEO is. So I think we should talk about that.
Yep.
I think this has really become kind of the year of the iBuyers, as it's been kind of dubbed. And this is, this kind of talks about a lot of different things, the Compass valuation and some other stuff.
Sure.
I think, Redfin, I think, is a huge deal that happened this year. That can kind of tie in some things with Zillow. And then really just talking about all the damn capital that's been pouring into this space recently with, again, SoftBank. And then maybe kind of end up with, the upstream and RPR app kind of thing. I know there's a lot of discussion that at the year-end meeting. So I think those are, to me, the five maybe things we can talk about.
That sounds good, man. So let's get started with NAR, because obviously that is, that was like the big thing we focused on kind of early in the year.
It was always who's going to be, is it going to be a woman? Is it going to be somebody outside the industry? I predicted Bob Goldberg. From the start. And Bob took over.
He did indeed. I don't know. I guess now that it's done over and done with, it almost feels like that probably was the right pick. Like I said, in one of my posts, what I didn't realize was just, sort of the how terrified people were at NAR. They needed to change the culture. And I think Bob is absolutely the right guy to do that. So here's my question. Since he was your guy from the beginning, how do you think he's done so far?
I think he's done good. I mean, I liked, if I put it in kind of phases here, I think the initial kickoff where they did that kind of the time is now kind of event, and it was you know, streamed and all over the internet. And he kind of opened himself up on LinkedIn as far as wanting feedback. I think that first push was a great intro, and kudos to whoever kind of organized that, because I think it was really well done and really showed as like, this is kind of a technology kind of thing, right? Where it was all social media out and like he was trying to be as open and as accessible as possible, right?
Right.
Then going forward, he had done a lot of interviews. He had done a great one with Andrew from Real Scout, and he was on my Listing Bits podcast, and we had a good time there.
Yeah.
And then you kind of rolled into basically the conference, right? And those that attended there were talking about how there may be some dues being raised because they really had a lot of advocacy issues that they had to present. And it seems like right now they kind of got a black eye on that for all of what we all think NAR's proudness is on the Hill. This tax reform bill is like really not such a great thing, you know, from NAR standpoint, as they've said said as much for the homeowner thing. So, you know, if they lose that, if they, you know, because always I think at the end of the day, everybody says, well, you know, these guys are a great powerhouse on the Hill.
Right.
And that kind of makes up for some of the other things that they think are missteps with NAR. I think he's walking into a really tough time here.
Yeah,
in, I mean, in the association's history, in the country's history. So he may not have thought he was going to get into that, but with this stuff on Capitol Hill, he's going to be tested totally.
And not only is going to be tested, I think NAR is losing it. I don't see a path to victory there for NAR. You know, I just don't. But that's like maybe a little bit, we should probably do a whole topic on that. But, you know, I mean, I tend to agree with you. I think so far, his start was really good. I think the whole new change in style, communication, outreach, all of that's good. I guess I'm still sort of waiting to see, right? Wait and see. It's almost like, I mean, I'm not saying that Bob is anything like Donald Trump. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying we have a new CEO, new president coming in. You know, what do they accomplish? And it's like, well, it's, you know, time will tell. As of yet, I don't know that, you know, there's not like a signal, you know, thing that we can point to yet. Saying Bob's
it's been
accomplished
less than a year.
But totally agreed. But you know, like the whole first 100 days type of thing, you know, he hasn't come out in the first 100 days and totally, you know, did something major. I assume that what he's been doing first, you know, phase, like you said, is just, you know, introducing himself to the industry. Although we did know him, but we didn't know him, right? Because he wasn't the head guy. Sort of, you know, setting a new tone at NAR. I think he's done a really good job of that.
Yeah, I think, but that I don't think you want to understate that. I mean, I think changing the tone, setting a vibe. I mean, that was so stodgy and so confrontational. I think in the past, just even that. I mean, you got to give.
Oh no, absolutely. Like I said, I think that's why he was picked, and I think that's why, you know, he was probably the right person, you know, at the right time, because NAR needed to heal, right? It needed to heal internally. It needed to heal its relationships with state and local associations. I mean, it. You know, it just had a lot to do on that front. I think Bob's, you know, the right guy for it, and he's done a pretty good job. In terms of other accomplishments, too early to tell, but, you know, haven't seen anything yet, right? So,
yeah,
you know, I think, you know, the bigger question for me is not just Bob, but the leadership team, right? You know, those guys have like done something unique where all three of them, right, have decided that, okay, we're going to really carry this on for 3 years. We'll see, you know, how that goes. And we'll also see if some of the things that they wanted to do maybe got sidetracked because, like you said, these, you know, the major legislative issues that are going on. So we'll see. I mean,
yeah.
I feel like we'll know more maybe by the end of next year, right? Because by that time, you know, he'll have been in office for a lot longer. You know, he should have been able to put, you know, a lot of the initiatives he wants to do, like the think tank and, you know, restructuring NAR and all of those types of things. You know, maybe it's a little too early to say that he was able to do that. I don't know. But as of now, I don't, apart from kind of the tone, and I'm not saying tone's not important. Tone is important. But apart from the tone, I'm not certain that I see like a whole new NAR yet.
Oh, yeah. No, it's going to, I mean, that's going to take some time, right? For sure. Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, if that's the judgment, then that is, I guess the question is this. So it's next year when we're doing this show, right, and we talk about Bob. We talk about NAR.
Good.
What are we going to look at? Like, what's going to be our sort of standards, right, for saying, you know, yeah, he hit it out of the park, or you know, he totally struck out, or he hit a double, right? I mean, what are we going to look at?
I think if I was going to give a rating, and I think the one that probably matters the most is that some of these things in this current legislation, in the, this tax reform, quote unquote, are rolled back a bit. Or at least kind of they've had some success in toning them down. I mean, if he can get something significant on the way it is from now to then, I think that'll be a major win. So that would be kind of one hash I would look for on a win side for him.
In your opinion, what would be significant? Because right now, I think if I'm not mistaken, the House version has $10,000 or something like that for state and local taxes.
Yeah,
and I can't remember, the mortgage instruction is sort of kept, but limit capped. The Senate version, I think, eliminates it, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And what would be a big win?
Well, the other thing I think also is I don't know if this made it yet. I mean, it's been such a confusing process. What was the amount of residence you had to have? How many years you had to have being a home to be a primary?
I think it was 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah, it got moved to 5 years, right? I think it was two or something.
It was two. Yeah.
So I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, that, you know, I know that having, you know, owned income property before, that's a big deal.
No, what I'm saying, so is it if he gets it to 3 years?
Well, you know,
is
that a big win? 4 years? Across the board at those issues, and he either gets one off or all, three of them lowered or turned around a bit. I think that would be a good thing, right? But to have them go into the way they are right now, it's just not acceptable. I mean, they've said so, right? It's not acceptable to them. So we'll see what happens.
I mean, I think that's a really good measure. The other thing I guess I would look at is by next year this time, you know, we should have a really clear idea of who, you know, who the next tier of NAR staff, you know, leadership is under Bob. Right. Because right now I'm not sure, like, who's number two over there? Who's number three?
Well, it's weird, right? Because it's volunteer run, right? So it's Elizabeth, right?
No, I mean staff. I mean, like, you know, so Bob is the CEO, the various SVPs, like, you know, who are they?
Right. I mean, but can you name anybody below Dale back in the day?
I could name Bob. That was it.
Right. Right.
And Lori, right? That was always Lori. Yeah.
Right.
So, but you know, we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
I mean, I know some of the people over there.
Yeah. As do I. And, you know, I got in a lot of trouble with Bill Brown because I suggested that Bob bring in his own team. You know, and I'm like, look, that's not a comment on the existing staff. I'm just saying, like, every time a new leader takes over, they bring in their own people.
Yeah, that and that's been happening for him anyway. I mean, when he got promoted, you know, when Frank Sibley left and he took over some of that stuff, I mean, his team under him got elevated. So I'm sure that's going to happen.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So next year when we're evaluating the overall performance, I think I would be looking at, you know, who are his lieutenants?
Yeah.
Right? Because he could be the greatest general in the world. If you don't have good lieutenants, man, you're not going to get anything done.
Yeah.
Right? So we'll just have to see, you know, who those are. All right, so that's NAR. I mean, at this point, it's up in the air. Positive sign so far. Feels good, but, you know, we can't point to anything just yet.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Yeah. iBuyer.
Yeah, I mean, this to me seems like the year, right? I mean, Open Door kind of like, I was joking on this recent blog post I wrote. You know how they always talk about where Facebook and Instagram, anything that Snapchat does, they kind of copy now on Facebook and Instagram and other products, right? I mean, most famously, their stories. Yeah. And the joke in the industry is that even Spiegel, who's the CEO of Snapchat, is really the head of product development for Facebook. Right? So I took that and I thought, you know, Eric Wu, who's the CEO of Open Door, I thought that would be a funny thing because, you know, Zillow has Instant Offers and Redfin has Redfin Now. So to me, Eric Wu is the head of product development for Redfin and Zillow, right? Because everybody is trying to get a piece of that game. But to me, if I have to say it, I mean, just forgetting just the topic of iBuyers, but like what the industry, what the portals are trying to do there, it seems a bit, especially from the Zillow side, the Instant Offers, they've only rolled it out in a few markets. And I feel like, I don't know, you know, they're just testing, as they like to say, in a few markets, but it doesn't feel like it's this runaway hit that, you know, everybody was worried about, right? Mm-hmm. And that could be just them being deliberate and really truly testing things. And that could be a matter of the market. I mean, things are so hot right now that, you know, this notion of we'll sell your house in 10 days instead of a month. Well, you know what? it'll sell in 10 days anyway, right?
So
it might be a part of, it just might be a market condition.
Right.
But, you know, it's interesting. we'll see here.
So are you saying that, like, well, I guess what's funny about it to me is, say 2017 is the year of the iBuyer. And I feel like the only thing that's changed is Zillow entered the game. But I mean, Open Door's been around for a couple of years, right? They started in 2014, so this third full year. So it's like...
Well, yeah, but I mean, just starting, I mean, they really didn't start making imprint and probably, you know, until 2 years after that, which is, mm-hmm. you know, just about early last year.
Right. Right. So I guess, all right. So let's just say that we were sort of, you know, waiting to see, okay, is this going to work in some way? It's obviously working in some fashion, right? Because Phoenix, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth, they're having some impact. You know, no one's going to say they have, you know, 20-30% market share, but, you know, they're doing deals. Last time I looked, they had something like 5,000 transactions. So, you know, that's something.
Yeah, I think there's a band, a section of the market that they can kind of like do okay with in the current kind of business metrics they have to use, mm-hmm. their KPIs, right? But so if you fall into that band of, you know, whatever that price range is, that range, they can do it. But I think in order for them to expand, they have to figure out, well, can I lower my margin? Or can I lower my things to get into to widen that?
Right.
And I think they've kind of found a sweet spot now. But I think in order for them to grow, they've got to figure out ways of cutting costs, either buying the home or mm-hmm. the processing to really expand and grow to other houses and other markets, right?
Right.
You know, and I think they chose their current markets were chosen because they fit in the range that was their kind of sweet spot. But if they want to grow everywhere, they've got to figure out ways of handling all types of markets out there. So that's what I would be looking for with Open Door and what's going on there.
Right. I mean, we'll find out. All I'm saying, though, is they've been around, right? And they've spawned competitors. Right. And like OfferPad and Amni and all these guys are out there as well. It's become the year of the iBuyer because Zillow jumped in the game.
Yeah.
But you know, remember, until they did, nobody was worried about Open Door. You know, nobody was talking about them except me.
But I think it's still relevant to talk about that. You know, these are all companies that are, I mean, I think Zillow did at one point post a profit, but these guys are all still selling 50 cents for a dollar. Mm-hmm. Right.
Zillow is definitely posting a profit. We do have to talk about those guys.
Yeah. In the space of these are growing companies or funded companies, none of them right now have really proven out to be a profitable model yet either. Mm-hmm. So it's really, I think it's really, you know, second inning here.
I agree with that.
That stuff. And the market, I think the market is so damn hot that this, you know, this value proposition they give out is just, it's not as alluring as it could be in a different type of market.
But I think that's also dependent on the local market, right? You know,
yeah.
Because we could say it's super hot. It's like not everywhere is super hot, right? I mean, Orange County, super hot. San Francisco, super hot. You know, I mean, I was just in Greenville. It's hot, but you know, you still see homes on the market for 60 days.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if you want the certainty, and it's not just the... It's not just a, like, you know, I'm going to list it today and sell it in 3 days. It's all the annoying pain in the ass shit you got to do, right, to sell a house.
No, right? Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. With Open Door, you're saying, I don't have to stage it. I don't have to do squat, right? You know, I could keep my living room messy. I don't have to take my kids anywhere, you know. Okay. So I'll take 10% less. There are going to be people who do that, I feel like. And we'll see, you know, we'll see how it proves out. Like you said. To me, I still feel like the big issue is, fine, it's easy to sell a house to these guys, but it's not any easier to buy a house from them, I don't think, right? It's like marginally easier.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I will tell you, I think I told this story on another episode, but mm-hmm. They had launched in the Dallas area, and one of my employees, they were looking at houses, and his wife just would not go to any look at any house unless mm-hmm. it was an Open Door house because she knew they just stop the car, get out and look inside.
Right.
And that was so frictionless. All they did was scan the neighborhood mm-hmm. for open house signs.
Right. For open door signs.
Open door signs. Right. Sorry.
Right.
Open door signs.
Yeah.
So they could do that. Right. So, yeah.
No, I mean,
that's a little innovative there. Yeah.
It is innovative. And I think that, but I'm saying it's still marginally easier. The real difficult part comes in after you've signed the contract.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Right. And I think that's what I was saying. They've got to figure out a way to make that.
Correct. If them or Redfin or Zillow or anybody figures out a way of making the purchase process as easy as it is to sell a house, then that's game, right? Like that's when things get super exciting and super interesting.
You know, it's a little bit of a nuance here, but this whole notion of kind of privacy and and where people are, I mean, you know, it started really with Uber, right? I mean, you go on the internet or you go on an app and some stranger shows up and takes you somewhere.
Right.
That almost sounds spooky to some people, right? But all of a sudden it's the hottest thing. This notion of letting some, you know, letting somebody in your house that you don't know.
Right.
Well, Open Door is doing that. And then, you know, look at Amazon.
Right.
Amazon now has a service where they'll send you a lock with a code on it.
So that's
the Amazon delivery guy goes in into your fucking house.
I know.
And leaves the package.
I know.
And I was asking some of the people in the office, do you think you'd be cool with that? I'm like, hell no. I bet you in a year, everybody's going to have that because, you know, YouTube was filled, especially around Christmas time, with these people that are just roll up on your house and take packages off your doorstep, right? So,
that line
just keeps going down and down, man.
Yeah, but not only that, but the nice thing about all of that is it's not a stranger, right? Like, say Uber knows who the driver is. You know, and like when somebody's walking into an open house at for Open Door knows who walked in, right? So if something happens in your house, they can pretty much, you know, they can pretty quickly identify it was this guy, you know? Same thing with Amazon. It's like, okay, Amazon employees can enter my door, but Amazon knows who they are. So if I come home and I find my vase, you know, is smashed or somebody stole my, you know, artwork, like I know, hey, Amazon, right?
Yeah, but I mean, every company employs creepy employees, right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, of course.
So you might know who they are, but they're, you know, creepy's creepy.
Of course, no. I'm saying you're right. It's a hell of a lot better than, you know, just leave it outside. So yeah, I could see that taking off. You know, and hopefully one of the big tech things we got to talk about next year is what happens if these, you know, sort of remote, like smart lock doors become, you know, much, much more commonplace.
Yeah, I love mine just because I hate carrying keys.
Here's the thing. I mean, once that happens, it's one of those things about the industry that we don't really talk about very much. But the importance of lockboxes to the value of an agent is pretty high. You get rid of that and, you know, things could change. Right? I mean, we're not anywhere near there yet, so I don't feel like it's worth dwelling on. But you know, could you imagine if like 70% of the homes in America are equipped with smart locks? So you don't need a key, you know.
I mean, that's, right? I mean, I wonder if the guys at Super are thinking about that, right?
Oh, they have to be. You know, they absolutely have to be. It's just, we as an industry don't tend to think about like how important that lockbox is for keeping people in the MLS or keeping people in the association. I mean, it's really
important. Oh, no. I mean, those contracts are, I mean, those guys are masters at, of agreement lock-in and, you know, they're building kind of false walls out there.
Yeah.
Of membership because of just the lockbox contracts. Absolutely.
So what do you think happens to iBuyer? I mean, you know, before we transition, like what do you think happens to that? What are you hoping to see in 2018?
No, again, I think I've said this before. I think it's really three different markets, right? There's the high-end market, right?
Right.
Where some baller billionaire wants to have a ski in, ski out condo in Aspen, right?
Right.
Well, you can go, you know, those guys can go online, take a look, they'll know the area. I'm like, and they'll click and buy that thing without really going there, right?
Mm-hmm.
High end kind of baller. Right. And then there's the low end where, you know, it's foreclosures, it's, you know, fixer up. You know, a lot of people go on the court steps and buy sight unseen. They'll do it on the internet too.
Right.
The game is you and I. Will Rob Hahn or Greg Robertson buy a house? Or, you know, average Joe, buy a house without looking at it online. What does it take to kind of, that's the market for these guys. And they have to get as close to that as possible.
Interesting.
And that's what I look at it, right? Because the top and the below, they're figuring that out, have figured that out. That's just going to get, that efficiency is only going to go up there. They're just testing this stuff. Okay, what if I buy it from them?
Right.
Okay, that's cool. What if I had a can't, what if I let people go in by themselves? What if there's a virtual way of going? I mean, they're just all pecking at these things and throwing shit on the wall right now to like, what is it going to take to kind of like give that last nudge?
Mm-hmm.
And it might, I don't think it'll ever totally happen, but can it get from 3% to 13%? And is that, you know, what kind of business is that?
Right.
So that's the way I look at it.
I like that. I mean, I think I'm looking at how closely, how much can these guys narrow the margin between traditional sale and selling it to an open door?
Yeah.
Like right now, you know, it's what, like 9%, right? Mm-hmm. I can't remember. It depends on who you talk to, but yeah, you know, you pay a premium, a pretty significant premium, you know, in order to remove the annoyance factor.
Yeah.
Now, we know that people do this with cars all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'll trade my car into a dealer knowing that I'm leaving money on the table, right? Just because I don't want to deal with,
I've done it myself, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. And we know it, but we do it anyway. With houses, because maybe they're just so expensive, it's just, you know, the major asset you own, people aren't as willing to do that. But if they could get those guys, if they could get the margin to, let's say, 2%, meaning if I sell with an agent, it costs me 6. If I sell to Open Door, it costs me 8, right? I think at that point, like, there's a tipping point at which consumers go, yeah, hell with it. You know, 2%, sure, I'll pay that.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that's what I look at. You know, that's what I'd be paying attention to. Now, problem is, I don't know where you get that data, because none of these guys are like reporting, you know, like we're able to do it at 7%. Like, but if we could figure that out, you know, maybe it'll be something in the marketplace that starts to show, like, hey, Open Door is now able to do this at 7.5%. Boy, that's a game changer. You know, if the difference is only 1.5 points, like, a lot of people are just going to say, screw it, just sell it to Open Door.
Yeah.
So, all right, so we have to talk about Zillow a little bit.
Redfin, right?
I mean, Redfin. And Redfin, because iBuyer leads, right? Like I said, I mean, iBuyer wasn't a thing until Zillow did it. And those guys have had a pretty big year, in my opinion. Like, they turned profits. They're, you know, all this criticism from everybody else, like, hey, you're just sucking down investor money. That's not true anymore.
Right, right. I mean, now it's about sustainability, right? So,
correct.
You know, how they can accomplish that.
Correct. And what's interesting to me is Zillow's doing Zillow things, right? And they're growing. You know, they got 175 million uniques or whatever it is. You know, they're crunching along. But, you know, for the first time, I feel like there's a real threat to them, right? Like, I don't know why, but I never considered Realtor.com to be like a real threat to Zillow, right? But I feel like Redfin is a real threat to them. I mean, so let's talk about Redfin. They went public. What's your take on them?
Oh, I just love their culture. I think I've got a man crush on Glenn Kelman. I mean, anybody who says turd in the punch bowl has got my heart, you know?
Yeah.
No, I think they're fantastic. I think they're, you know, again, I've always said Redfin is what everybody was afraid that Zillow was going to become, right?
Right.
They got great people over there. I know some of the senior leadership over there, really smart guys. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're, like I said, their culture is fantastic. What did they start off with? I think they came out really strong. Like, second day was 31 a share, and now it's hovering about 24, 25-ish.
Right.
Still strong. Yeah, it's dropped. Yeah. Not a bunch. I mean, they went down, but they're back on the way up again. You know, and really, not to jump ahead, but this is, you know, Keller Williams announced they're going to become a technology company.
Right.
There's all this drive towards these technology-enabled real estate franchises, or not franchises, but companies, right? And Redfin really is that, and the most mature of that, right?
Right.
Mixing that old school with new school very well.
So,
Here's
a question for you. What makes Redfin so much better than Zip Realty?
Well, okay.
Because, you know, Zip went public too, right?
Right. Well, Zip is now part of Realogy, right?
Correct. Right. So, and then they tanked. So, you know, I mean, from a business model standpoint, they're very, very similar. It's just obviously Redfin's kicking ass and Zip is no longer. So it's what's the difference between them? Is it just the leadership?
I think, you know, I do think culture matters a lot. I mean, and you know, even in those videos they put out there, there is like this sense of like, consumerism, you know, that they're there for the consumer. And Glenn was almost saying, like, if you're looking for like big profits and at the sacrifice of whatever, that we're not the company for you, right? So, you know, I kind of believe him. Other people could call, you know, just that's just Pollyanna-ish, right, to kind of say that stuff. But I think it's really inbred in their culture, right? So I think that makes them different from everybody, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, Zillow has a bit of that where, you know, they're all about the consumer. They're all about the consumer, right? So anything they do is all about the consumer. But there's an edge to that, that, you know, a sharp edge that I don't think really Redfin has that they do.
Really? That's interesting. Because what I found funny about the whole thing is, in a weird way, Zillow's now like the defender of the industry. Like, neither of those guys are coming out saying we're disruptors. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like,
they all make money off of agents for sure.
Right. So it's like you go to like an Inman, you know, Connect floor show, and then you see all these companies that are like, you know, we have this virtual tour app and we're disrupting the industry. You know? Meanwhile, Redfin and Zillow both are like, we're not disrupting the industry at all, but we're keeping exactly the same. And I'm like, that can't be true. That just can't be true. But because Redfin is a brokerage, I feel like Zillow finds itself in this odd position of being the defender of the industry against Redfin, which, I mean, boy, I never thought I'd see that day, right? But that's what I feel.
No, I feel, I mean, you know, if NAR would treat MLSs and others as well as Zillow did, right? It'd be a different thing, right?
But it'd be a different thing.
And that goes down from the MLSs to the brokers, the agents, in a sense, right? I mean, no, it is true. I mean, even from within, like, you know, with the way that Upstream's again kind of configured, they're trying to blow things up,
right?
They're trying to disrupt things,
right?
So it's very odd that, and still, like, when I go out there, the agents, you know, and you know, many of them are closet Zillow Premier agents, I'm sure, but there's still some sort of animosity out there towards them. And I just shake my head at it because I don't think they really totally understand. It's hard to shake off that first impression, right?
I mean, I think that's part of it. The other part of it is just brokenness in the brokerage and agent industries. But I tell you what, man, from my standpoint, I think Redfin going public was probably the most important event of 2017 because we didn't know how big these guys were. We didn't know how good they were until they went public and started revealing numbers. Right? We just didn't know. Now we do. I mean, they're kind of scary, right? I actually think, you know, so I have this whole thing that I've been working on this whole year about future brokerage. And I feel like Redfin's like one of the two futures, right? Because there's just so, I mean, just simply the fact that they have employee agents is a total game changer.
Yeah, totally. Right?
And other brokers are talking about, well, you know, can we, it's never going to work or they're not going to work as hard. Like, yeah, all right. I don't know. So we'll see. I mean, I think we'll see what Redfin does. You know, if you've seen some of my predictions on my blog, I think these guys are potential monsters. What's funny about it is their stock price and everything's getting hammered because their margins aren't that good, right? Compared to a tech company, their margins suck. Except compared to real estate company, their margins are unbelievable.
Right.
So it's like 35% gross margin. Like, you know, tech companies look at that and go, what's wrong with you? Realtors look at that, like brokers look at that and go, holy crap. So it's, you know, we'll see what happens. But I think Redfin's going to be, you know, they're going to start making some moves. I expect 2018 to be, you know, really, really interesting, you know, from that standpoint.
What do you expect from Zillow in 2018?
You know, I think unless something totally changes, I think Zillow just keeps on trucking, right? You know, they posted a profit finally. You know, so it's like, all right, you know, they know that they can, you know, start to take profit without endangering growth. And I think they'll keep doing that. What I do expect, though, is for 2018, they have to deal with the Redfin issue. They do, right? So I don't know exactly how they're going to do it. I feel like they'll do something. And the other thing to really think about is, you know, there are a lot of folks who think that Zillow's, you know, traffic figures are kind of BS anyway, right? Like 175 million monthly uniques. Well, there are only like 330 million Americans, right?
Right.
So we might be getting to a point of market saturation for Zillow, like where they really have to start thinking about international expansion.
Well, that's a total business model change everywhere else.
Right. But they have to, right? I mean, at some point they can't grow in the US anymore. They can't.
Right.
At least they can't grow traffic. They might be able to grow their business, you know, charge more, you know, what have you. But, you know, so I expect 2018, you know, we might start to see some serious like international expansion for Zillow just out of necessity. But speaking of Redfin, there's another brokerage company that's been all over the news, you know, which is Compass.
Yeah. And speaking of international expansion, that's what they really, their latest $450 million from SoftBank, that's what they specifically mentioned, that they want to go international. They want to use that money to go international.
Right.
These guys are such a head scratcher to me, dude.
Yeah. What's your take on Compass? Because they're a head scratcher for me too.
you know, there's been a few, I've read some stuff that the Brian at 1000 Watt talked about. Inman talks about, it's like, they're just number one, it's a leadership, right? Their CEO, is it Refkin?
Yeah. Robert Refkin.
Goldman Sachs.
Great first name.
Goldman Sachs, you know, a true player, you know, knows that his Rolodex is wide and deep. I think, you know, you have to give, a lot of it up to that guy, right? He's been.
Yeah, of course.
So I think there's a lot of it comes from the top there. Do I think they're worth, you know, what is it, $2.2 billion now? I don't know. I just wrote about this. I don't know where the pony is on that. on that. But I did do some digging, and, you know, SoftBank had also bought Fortress, which owns NationStar. Mm-hmm. Or had investments in there, and they're with the whole that Zome, right?
Right.
And Zome was supposed to be this. If you bought from them, you had to use all their services, like their title and all the other kind of things through them, and that's the way they made money. So, could there be a kind of a moment when, just like with Trulia and Zillow, where somebody goes, "Well, we've owned both of these. Why are they separate companies? We can marry this coolness of the front and this thing in the back and put something together." Right. I mean, that's a very crazy kind of prediction there. But I just thought that SoftBank owning these two entities or investing in these two entities was kind of interesting.
You know, the thing that is a head scratcher for me is I don't actually understand their business model, right? Like, what makes it so unique?
Yeah.
Like with Redfin, they have a unique business model, right? Employee agents, you know, the website does all the lead gen. So they're able to get 35% gross margins. With Compass, I don't know any of that detail, right? Because they're private, obviously. But we do know they're out there paying huge sums of money to top producing agents to bring them in.
Well, isn't that it, right? So if you say that, you know, the whole 80-20 rule, right? Of it's 100% of the business is really brought in by 20. Our business model is to capture that 20% of people that are actually doing business. And
but here's the
we're
going
to roll, right? I mean,
right. The problem, though, is this. 80% of the sales might be being brought in by 20% of the agents, but those 20% are generating very, very thin profits, you know, because of the high splits. Like, you know, you could look at NRT, you know, they do $4 billion. Okay, you know, probably 20% of the agents are bringing in $3 billion of the $4 billion, but the profits on those 20% are minuscule because they're on like 95-5 splits. Because they're such high producers, you know, in order to keep them, you got to give them. You got to give away the farm. So with Compass, what I don't understand is, okay, so if, let's say they go and pay, whatever, $200,000 for some top agent team. Are they putting them on a, like an 80-20 split? Like, I don't know how that's sustainable. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, maybe, I mean, I hate to use this analogy because everybody uses it all the time, but maybe it's like an Uber strategy where it's like, okay, right now we have to use humans.
Right.
But you know what? We know in 10 years and 15 years, we're going to have the technology down where it's all driverless cars. Right. So we're just, you know, we're going to bring over the top. We're going to figure this out with the top 20% of the agents, knowing that this AI technology that this $450 million is going to spend that, you know, when we release the I agent,
profits go to and fire and get rid of all these high priced agents that we brought in.
It's like Uber on some other wacko scale.
Who knows? Maybe. I'm just saying, like,
I'd love to see their pitch deck, man. What does that say?
I would love to see their numbers. I would love to see their internal financials. You know, like, okay, so you brought in this top producing agent that's a 500 deals in Chicago or whatever. You know, great. What kind of profit are you generating? What kind of revenue?
And like, they're going to make a CRM. Like, that's a big deal. Like, oh,
yeah.
And then, you know, they're tech driven. I mean, I've looked at our database and we have quite a few Compass subscribers to Cloud CMA. I mean, so why are they buying Cloud CMA if they've got the best technology out there?
Well, maybe they haven't built it yet, you know, or maybe they'll come calling with a big check for you. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I mean, they want the best real estate software, you know, like, give me a call.
But so, you know, the Compass thing is interesting for a lot of reasons. Like I said, number one, they're doing great. Good for them. You know, the leadership, I get all that. But like I said, I just don't get the business model, like why it's different than home services or Realogy, right? And, you know, it's like, yeah, okay, they raised $450 million. That's awesome. But if Realogy decided, you know what, we're going to do the Compass thing. We're just going to go pay people. Like, those guys could raise just an ass load of money, you know, just as easily. So I'm like, all right, maybe, you know. But the other interesting thing is that SoftBank put $450 million into that.
Jamie, right? Christmas, yeah.
Which is like this massive flow of like venture capital and just private equity money and all this money coming into like residential real estate, right?
Yeah.
And Stefan Swanepoel is very, very fond of talking about that. Right? Just hundreds of millions of dollars in capital flowing into this sector. I'm kind of like, I don't know. I mean, what's going on? You know, like, are you, what do you think?
No, I mean, this goes in, I didn't list this in the top five, but this is part of this capital discussion of this kind of consolidation, right? Which is the whole thing of the acquisitions, like Clarity got bought by CoreLogic, right? So to me, that falls in this discussion we have. Right. And what other kind of those kind of moves where it won't be maybe funding a startup, but companies buying other companies to take them out or add to what they've got going on.
Right.
So, yeah.
You know, in that vein, though, we got to talk about, I mean, home services buying Long and Foster is very, very similar.
Right.
I mean, that's a giant.
Right. So this consolidation is just, you know, in my space, it's always about MLS consolidation, but this consolidation is going out in a lot of different places. Or, you know, the other one was a big thing I thought was really so smart was WolfNet, mm-hmm. Vista, the private mm-hmm. equity who bought Lone Wolf. So Lone Wolf buying Instant Solutions, which I thought was really, really smart. So, it's, you know, it's, there's a lot of people getting gobbled up out there. It's interesting to see. And I think right now with the SoftBank also, as I said before, they've already got investments in NationStar, which owns, Mr. Cooper, I guess they renamed themselves and Xome, which is also, I think Xome or SolutionStar bought Red Real Estate Digital, which handles a lot for home services. There's a lot of, it feels like there's something there, but again, I just can't see the grand. I think, you know, maybe the whole thing is this, there's this tone or this thing that they try to say that everybody realizes. They go, they know, okay, real estate has been slow to adopt to technology, right? That's the premise. So all these guys, all they're trying to do is like, hey, we're fixing that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And right now it seems the hot du jour thing of the tech of the day or the play of the day is these tech-driven or tech-enabled brokerages, right? And that's started with Redfin, but that's kind of what Xome is or trying to be. I don't know what the hell's going on there. But that's exactly what Compass is, right? That's what they want to be known for. So, yeah. I don't know, man. I just don't see it.
Well, you know, I guess one way to think about it is maybe it's just – like you said, everyone understands that real estate is inefficient, it's broken, you know, there's all kinds of problems. So all this venture capitalists feel like, whoa, let's dump 20 million, 30 million, 100 million into this and somebody figures it out, you know, we make a couple billion dollars.
And that's the model, right? They just fund a bunch of them and they know that maybe out of 50, one will hit it. So they've got to.
But if that one hits it,
it goes big.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do feel like a lot of the money might be dumb money. Honestly, right? Because this industry is unlike any other industry, right? Like in the world, you know, because obviously the rest of the world, they don't have the particular cooperation, compensation, NAR, MLS. They don't have any of that. So, I mean, I know like I've talked to a bunch of investors as just, you know, in my consulting capacity and almost all of them. So explain the real estate industry to us. I'm like, how much time you got, right? So I don't know. I feel like a lot of it is dumb money because they're not, like I said, I mean, okay, maybe I'm wrong, but if Compass has some business model that I'm not aware of, but you're going to drop $450 million to a company that still has agent splits, like where's the money coming from, right? So we'll see.
Somebody, super interesting. One of our listeners, please send us the pitch deck. I would love to see their pitch deck.
Yeah. Me too. What's interesting though is the area where capital really would make a huge difference, no capital is flowing to. And that is, of course, the MLS space, right? The MLSs themselves. Like, that's a mystery to me, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Association-owned, fine, you're not-for-profit. I get it. But like, First MLS down in Atlanta? Like, why aren't they out there raising $100 million, right?
Right. No.
like, why, you know, if all this money's flowing into real estate, into these like CRM companies and rinky-dink, whatever, you know, hey, this is a better virtual tour company. Or like, dude, like, there's 700 MLSs. Of them, let's say 50 are really, you know, significant. Like, why aren't people dumping money into those?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think it's still, it's a matter of this kind of regionalism. You know, it's just, they're there, right? So it's not like somebody has announced some Uber MLS system, not to say Uber in the capacity of, company, but huge, right? Like,
right.
You know,
some awesome something. Yeah.
Right.
You know, but you know, I feel like maybe that's coming, and I fear me, that's number five, like, of the most significant. Which is, and I have to admit, like, I was wrong about how important this is. But dude, MLS of choice is a big deal.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
It's a big deal. Yeah. Right. I mean, I was just been thinking about it for the last few weeks. I'm going, okay, what changes because of this? What do you think? What are you seeing? What do you believe is going to change because of this?
I don't think. I mean, you know, of course, a lot's been written about how the wording of this MLS of choice is a kind of bad wording, really.
Okay.
And, you know, this is not such a new concept, right? Because there has been, I know in California, they've had this kind of open agreement like this forever, right? Up in the NorCal area and everything else. So you don't, you know, this, mm-hmm. this notion has been going out there. So I think it's just, it's going to be a big deal as far as, you know, from an MLS standpoint, from dues and stuff, from a small number of regional pockets out there, but I don't think it's going to be the end all be all for the entire industry. I mean, is that what you're saying?
No, I don't know if it's end all be all, but I think it's a lot more significant than we thought.
So explain that.
Because the big thing to me was the fact that they completely delinked the MLS service area from association jurisdiction. Okay. And they, you know, pretty much in the wording of the thing, it says, hey, we encourage competition. And that has not been the case for, you know, 40 years, right? The MLSs don't tread on each other's turf.
Well, that's not true. I mean, you know, look at CRMLS. You know, they've been trying to go down into San Diego and somewhat successfully. And they're all, mm-hmm. you know, CAR tried to do a statewide. I mean, there's a lot of those kind of MLSs. I mean, look at freaking Bright, MRIS. Mm-hmm. So what do you mean they don't tread on each other's turf?
No, what I mean is, but think about like MLS growth in that sense. They go and sign up an association, right? Like say you're CRMLS, you want to expand San Diego. You know, what you're doing is going to say North San Diego County and saying, please join CRMLS, right? Bring the association over. I'm saying under the language here, it's like, screw that. Right? You don't have to go talk to some association. Just go in. Just start offering MLS services. Just compete straight up for brokers and agents.
Right? Yeah.
And that hasn't really been the case in the industry for a long time. Now, with respect to association-owned MLSs, like a CRMLS, I'm like, okay, you know, that may be the case, but realistically, politically, that's not going to happen, right? Because you're not going to go in and piss off like some, you know, local association that's neighbor to yours. I think it might be a little different though if we're talking about private MLSs, non-realtor MLSs.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I mean,
I could be totally wrong.
There are a few out there of private MLSs, yeah. So... Yeah. The first thing is you'd have to increase the number of those, and that would be very difficult to get going, maybe.
Of course. No, all of this is really difficult, yeah. Right? Because you have network effect, yeah. Right? But given that, I don't know, a typical MLS has 50% of its people who do no business, no production, right? If I'm the broker, if I'm that agent, you know, why keep paying, you know, not just the MLS fee, but the association dues?
Yeah, right. I mean, that's, we talked about before the call, this kind of notion of tiered pricing, right?
Right. So I feel like potentially what we're going to see, and look, it's potentially meaning not next year, you know, not 2019, but maybe by 2020. I mean, talk about capital flowing in. I could see some venture capitalists going, you know what? This little private MLS organization, take for example, you know, New York State MLS, right? Don Pfaff. Like that's a private company, man.
Yeah.
If somebody dumped $10 million into that thing, like they can't go out, you know, they can't go expand into other places and start being much more aggressive about recruiting people. Right? And a lot of these brokers, like, all right, you're on the hook for a bunch of, you know, realtor dues for a lot of agents who don't produce, so they do one deal a year. Like that to me is where things get super interesting.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, it is like the ultimate SaaS company, right?
Right.
I mean, just to put a point on it, right? I mean,
yeah,
membership due, yeah, and, right? And the churn rate, they don't even have to be doing it, but they'll still pay.
Right.
Yeah. Right. No, I mean, it's
a health club, yeah. You know. It's a health club. So I just feel like that's a really interesting development, right? And seems to me like the large brokers want that, right? Because they want to drive consolidation. NAR seems to want it. They want to drive consolidation. A lot of small locals and, you know, a lot of small MLSs are kind of like, what the hell do we do now?
And the MLS, traditional MLS vendors are by definition, like all the pitch deck would be, okay, here are the front pages mm-hmm. of the top five MLS MLS systems out there. And then they would just start writing fucking checks.
You know what else I would love to see though? Because like I said, think about this, right? The MLS service area no longer is linked to the association jurisdiction in any way.
Yeah, it's right? Okay. It's three slides. You're right.
I would love to see Bright MLS or CRMLS or HAR, right? You know, one of these big, you know, Arizona regional, one of these big, well-run MLSs, really sophisticated technology and support and all that. Just fucking go into like middle of Kansas somewhere, right? Go to the brokers of some 500-person MLS, be like, you can join us.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing that says HAR's market area is just Houston. Like, screw that. It's an MLS, you know?
You have a good point. No, I mean, it's...
I would love to see that.
Right? Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Do we want to talk about RPR at all or do we care?
We got to mention it, right?
So we got to mention it. The thing here was, the way that I look at this RPR, right? They're NAR owned, but I think of them as three different things. I think of them... you know, the first thing would be this app that they built, right? That's now free to agents that they spend $25 million a year, whatever it is, keeping.
Right.
Then the second thing is they're this vendor for this cabal of brokers, right? called Upstream, right? So they're the vendor of that. And the third thing they are is they have this AMP initiative, right? So the way I look at it is like I kind of don't think the app can justify that kind of cost, but mm-hmm. just outside looking, I don't have any inside knowledge. So I think there's going to be some improvement there. You know, I don't give two shits about them being the vendor for Upstream. Good for them. They got a contract. I mean, that's fine, right? I mean, any problems I have with Upstream are not about RPR. They're about just the concept and Upstream itself, right? And the app thing, I'm kind of behind. I think, you know, that perfectly matches kind of our vision of this front end of choice thing. So mm-hmm. any criticism I throw out there usually are mostly about just the cost of maintaining that app, right?
Right.
Just to frame things at the convention in Chicago, it was kind of a carpet bombing effort that Andrea wrote a big article, which was salacious and talking about how RPR employs, you know, more contractors than anybody ever thought of. And then RPR got a little cagey about that. I don't know why.
Right.
It's perfectly normal to have contractors. Why would you, why would you want to think to even who care? I would just be like, yeah, so what? On one level, right? But it, you know, it is NAR's money and, you know, there's all those kind of things. And I think there's something there, but not as much as it turned out to be. Or they amplified what thing could have been just minimized. And, you know, Brad wrote an article saying they should be shut down. And that immediately got a lot of comments that were kind of favorable to.
Yeah, but we've known that for years.
Right. And I know that there was some skepticism where, you know, a lot of the comments that were put down there, you know, I'd heard people saying it's almost like they were just, you know, robo comments in a sense where I don't remember if you remember that scene in Wall Street where they're trying to pump up a stock and he calls this one number and goes, Blue Horseshoe loves, whatever airline, right? It's almost like somebody at RPR sent the code word out to everybody's, you know, all their NAR board of directors and it says, Blue Horseshoe loves RPR. Go to Inman News and comment, right? I know a lot of people felt that was kind of a arranged kind of campaign, but you know, whatever. But now Brad, on his year-end predictions, has recently said he doesn't think that really Bob Goldberg has the political capital to shut down upstream or RPR, which kind of reminds me of like Walter Cronkite basically calling the Vietnam War is over.
Right. Right. Right.
Like, we can't win in Vietnam, right? I don't think RPR and upstream are going to go, are we going to be shut down anytime soon?
I don't know. Who knows? Like, what's interesting to me is if anyone could shut it down, it would be Bob Goldberg, right? Because he's been like so pro RPR. Like, he hasn't, you know what I'm saying? He's not been a hater, right? So for if he turns and says, you know what, we're going to shut it down, then I think the political, like, he may not have the political capital, but I actually think he could do it better than anyone else, right? I don't think he could shut it down next year just from a political standpoint, because then it looks like he did it because Brad told him to, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think he would be the guy to do it. But shutting down is one thing. I actually, like, look, what's the end game, right? Like, what is RPR's massive giant success actually look like? You know, that's how I almost think about it. So AMP is deployed to 50%, you know, 30% market share, like 30% of MLS are using AMP. Upstream is this giant success and has what? Because I've asked this about Upstream, like, what does success look like for Upstream?
Yeah, really.
If they have 30% of the listing data in the marketplace, is that success? Is that enough? I don't know, right? So let's just assume that, you know, Upstream is hugely successful. They're doing all this wonderful stuff. You know, they have 50% market share, what have you. And RPR, the app, is, I don't know, is widely used, right? Like, it's the thing they use for CMA. You're out of business, Greg, because nobody uses Cloud CMA anymore. Even if that were the case, I'm like, so what does that mean? If it gets to that level, right, does RPR become like a major revenue generator for NAR? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, are they starting to generate $100 million a year in revenue? So NAR could be like, all right, we're going to cut dues. Like, that's the piece I don't... Like, even if we assume everything works out and they're wonderful, like, what does that look like? And what does wonderful success look like? Okay. On the other hand, I actually feel like, you know, we could see RPR being shut down sooner rather than later, not because of anything we just talked about, but because of what we talked about way in the beginning, which is advocacy. If NAR is going to go raise the dues another 20, 25 bucks, to fund advocacy for, you know, protecting MID or what have you, I feel like a lot of people are going to go, why are you raising our dues again when you're spending $20, $25, you know, $25 million on RPR?
There was some Twitter stuff about that. It's like, right? It was like a twofer or something. It's like, well, right. NAR wants to raise $25 million more a month and RPR costs 25 or a year, sorry. And RPR costs that. Well, I've got this figured out, right? So
I saw that. No, I think that's... Yeah, I think that's where things get really challenging, right? Again, I could see, let's say mid-year next year, the board of directors is like, we want to raise, you know, what was that thing called back in the day under Dale? Like Realtor Political Action something. I can't remember. But I remember that debate, like raising dues by 20 bucks, like, you know, it was all over the place. And RPR was brought up then. So I'm saying if that gets brought up again, it's like, I don't know if it survives that, right? So... That I could see that happening. You know, frankly, what I think should happen is I think MOVE should just buy RPR. I think NAR should go to their partner, lean on them a little bit, and go, listen, it's not even going to cost you that much, right? Just give it to us in stock, right? Just give us MOVE stock, you know, $100 million worth or something, right? You know, something just to save face, like $50 million worth of MOVE stock, take over RPR and you run it. I actually think that would be the best saving way out for everybody.
I don't know about ironic, but it would be so funny because they were one of the vendors that was doing that, and that became fined, right? So, so they said no to MOVE.
To MOVE, I know, but I feel like because like who else has the kind of money to like buy out RPR?
Yeah,
right? You know, I mean, unless you go raise some money so I think you know it's almost like. We're going to keep talking about them, you know, Upstream, we're going to keep talking about it, RPR, we'll still keep talking about it. But, you know, it feels like, I don't want to say failure because it's not over yet, but let's put it this way. It's not like Upstream launched and then overnight there's been all this, you know, success, right? Like Alex is still traveling the land, like talking about upstream and how the MLS should adopt it or agree to it. He's still doing that. So it hasn't been this like overnight, like slam dunk success. Given that, I don't know. I feel like it's becoming less and less important to the conversation in the industry.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm dead wrong.
I mean, these things that may have been somewhat relevant back in the past, right? But are they really that relevant now?
What is it, 2 years ago? Right, yeah, now?
I mean, their nothing's launched like really either, right? So.
Right. You know, if they did it and then by March, you know, there's like, bang, here it is. And by July, you know, like we signed up these 10 MLSs and these 25 giant, you know, national companies. Like, okay, you know, at that point, it's like, wow, right? At this point, it sort of feels like, let me put it differently. It feels like RPR and upstream have to do something dramatic in 2018 for us to change kind of how we view them, right? They have to do something big, something impressive, like Compass just did. They got to go raise $400 million. You know, they got to do something big that makes us go, wow, look at that. Otherwise, I feel like it's going to be sort of death by a thousand cuts. And at some point during some NAR budget meeting, you know, it's going to come up, hey, you know, we could spend this money in advocacy and that's the end of it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think I almost agree with Brad. It's just so tough to shut that thing down. It's like it's a utility now in a sense, right? And they're paying for it already. It's already been wrapped in there. They're used to paying it. They got good people over there, great people over there.
They do.
So it's just a hard conundrum. And, you know, everybody gets so passionate about that a lot. It's hard to kind of,
right.
Like I say, I separate it into three different things and I still get a lot of shit for some of the stuff I write.
everyone's so like touchy about it too. Everyone's so passionate.
It's tough. It's a tough problem, but there is something there. Like, you know, maybe just divesting the ownership is, I don't know if move's the right person or place, but maybe there is something there. Cause I think part of it is,
I think
part of this is kind of like a little face saving too.
That's what I'm saying. Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, look, you're not going to get back everything you put into it. Right. But, you know, if somebody paid you $50 million for RPR today, right? You know, it's not making any money. What's it based on? Right. The valuation is like, because we like you. And that's why I'm saying move, because they have that relationship with NAR. You know, and $50 million is really not that much money for a company like Move. So I'm like, all right, sure, we'll take it. And, you know, you owe us a favor kind of deal.
Right.
So we'll see. So
why don't you, is going to be great for people when they've got family they hate is over for the holidays.
That's right.
They can sneak up to their room and put in their little AirPods and listen to us so that they don't have to talk to their.
Or they're on a really long cross-country flight going back home for the holidays. You know, they can listen to that. So let's wrap with this. What are you looking forward to personally in 2018?
Myself personally, hopefully that all my, you know, my family and friends are prosperous and healthy and that kind of stuff. And I'm super, I mean, I think I talked to all of the vendors. I think from a business standpoint, it looks like a good market next year. So I'm very excited about that. We are now at my company, we're, I think, at a scale where the things that we do really affect people as far as, because we have our products out there with a lot of people. So, we can make some changes and affect things. And, you know, the MLS market is just getting so interesting right now. And MLX is getting a lot of momentum right now. And I think we built it 2 years ago. It may have been a bit early, but having those 2 years to kind of refine it and such a different product than it was before, I'm very excited about that. But I'm just, you know, I think it's a great time to be in this industry, man. I'm really excited about it.
Right on. Let's see. I'm actually just looking forward to personal life. Never thought it was going to happen, but you know, hey, here it is. And it's freaking awesome.
That's awesome.
I guess, you know, it's exactly like you said, man. You just hope my friends and, friends and family are good, that they're prosperous, they're healthy. And that, I'm hoping that, you know, despite all the weirdness that goes on, like, you know, the good people rise, right? And that remains. So this has been fun, man. This is cool.
No, it's great. Sorry for taking the delay here, but thanks to everybody. Oh, yeah, happy holidays to everybody. Thanks for listening. And we're going to continue this next year and go bigger. We got some great sponsors next year too. So if you're still looking to sponsor, please call me or email at gregrobertson@gmail.com. And we'd love to have some sponsors, some other
wonderful
sponsors.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. And talk to you next time.
All right. Happy holidays.
Bye. You too.
All right. Bye. We'll